Europe's energy reliance on Moscow is becoming the topic of increasingly fierce debate. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is in London today meeting British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Though the UK is no longer a member of the EU, the two leaders are expected to discuss strategies for ending Europe's reliance on Russian fossil fuels. The trip comes a day after the European Union agreed a new round of sanctions against Russia for its war in Ukraine, including a decision to ban Russian coal. Mr. Scholz said it was a decisive step, but punishing Moscow for its Ukraine invasion without doing unnecessary harm to European countries at the same time has become an increasingly controversial topic inside Europe's biggest economy, as the BBC's Damian McGuinness explains from Berlin.
The whole country is really trying to come to terms with what's been decades of increasing dependence on Russian energy, and there are many reasons for that, such as it being the least harmful option in terms of environmental damage, also certainly the cheapest option compared to, say, energy from much further afield. There's definitely a feeling here that it was potentially, when it comes to security, in Eastern Europe, and possibly even for Europe in general, it was the wrong thing to do. So what's happening right now is the German government is trying to pivot away from Russian energy sources as quickly as possible. That means striking deals with countries like Qatar, UAE, also Norway. The government's trying to act quickly, but none of it's really quick enough. And I think what we're now seeing is, with the embargoes coming through, that is the first sign that Germany is really being forced to shift on this. Russian coal will go by the summer. Russian oil by the end of this year is the plan, and then gas by 2024. The government says that that's the quickest they can do without causing a huge economic recession.
Analysts have said that coal is one thing. It's fairly easy for Europe to find alternatives. But when it comes to oil and gas, how easy is it, though, to replace the heavy reliance on those supplies from Russia?
The majority of voters would say cut all of it straight away. The reality is there's a shortage of a lot of these supplies on the global market anyway. And then it's a cost factor. So the advantage of Russian fuels, whether it be particularly gas, is that it was very cost efficient. What Germany is having to do now is a quite controversial shift, one of them being looking at LNG. Fracking gas comes from very far away, a lot of it coming from the States. LNG fracking here in Germany is illegal. And now, suddenly, Germany is being forced to build two LNG terminals, doesn't have any so far, in order to import gas that's, in most cases, been fracked in the US across the Atlantic at a high cost, and a high cost environmentally as well, into Germany. This is the difficulty, really, that the German government is under, especially as more news of atrocities in Ukraine come out.
Now, since the invasion, it's been reported that the EU has made some $38 billion in energy payments to Russia. But as much as we've been talking, this is a diplomatic, geopolitical, even some argue, an ethical decision to ban these supplies. It's an economic decision, of course, too. And is there support within the country now to just blanket ban these commodities, which Germany and Europe as a whole relies on?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the polls among voters, there is general popular support for an instant ban, an instant embargo. The difficulty is, when you look at the details and when you talk to industry and business, what you find is that gas is essential for German industry. So it can be the chemicals industry, glass industry, pharmaceuticals, packaging. Chemicals in general use a lot of gas, and that is in short supply, and you can get it from further away, but it's more difficult. So if there was an overnight embargo on gas, the German government says whole industries would collapse in Germany, and that would lead to hundreds of thousands of job losses. And the irony within all this, one of the main figures who's having to make these decisions is Robert Habeck, who is the economy minister, and he's one of the leaders of the Green Party. That party has for years been arguing against Russian energy imports. It's been saying we shouldn't be reliant on Russian gas. But now he's the one having to make the case to the German people to say, well, we're going to have to rely on Russian gas a little bit longer, because otherwise the country is economically not going to survive.
The BBC's Damian McGuinness for us in Berlin. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Victoria.
It's not just politicians weighing in this week on Russia's war in Ukraine. The chairman of Russian aluminum giant Rusal has now called for an impartial investigation into killings of civilians in Ukraine. The BBC's Jenny Hill has more on that story from Moscow.
This is a rare intervention from the world of Russian industry. The chairman of Rusal, which is Russia's main aluminium producer, expressed his shock at reports of civilian killings in Bucha. Bernard Sonneveld, who's a Dutch citizen, demanded an objective and impartial investigation into what he described as a crime, although he didn't reference widespread international allegations that Russian troops committed the atrocities. Mr. Sonneveld, who said that his company employed people in 20 countries, including Ukraine, called for severe punishment for the perpetrators, no matter, he said, how hard that might seem in the context of the ongoing information war.
That's the BBC's Jenny Hill reporting from Moscow there. Well, Japan today followed in Europe's footsteps, unveiling its own ban on coal imports and other sanctions measures, including freezing assets of key Russian banks. Checking the numbers now, key European stock benchmarks are up more than 1%, led by financials and energy. In volatile trading today, Russia's currency, the ruble, is now little changed against the U.S. dollar. That's after the nation's central bank delivered a surprise 3 percentage point cut in interest rates. Policymakers there said it was due to higher inflation, a decline in economic activity, and heightened financial stability risks. To France now, where President Emmanuel Macron is having to split his attention between the war in Ukraine and efforts to win re-election. On Sunday, voting takes place in the first round of the country's presidential election. Though the war has overshadowed campaigning, the health of the French economy has become a big issue, especially when it comes to the rising cost of living and unemployment. The BBC's Thea Leggett traveled to the northeastern part of the country, where a quarter of young people are without work.
In a rather dark and noisy workshop a short distance from the centre of Calais, history is coming to life. This region is famous for its lace, Dentelle de Calais. Director Sébastien Montesuarez has been showing me how his vintage machines can still produce the finest material. But Sébastien has a problem. The average age of his workforce is 54. He badly needs new recruits.
It's difficult to attract young guys. First of all, you have to know that there are steel industries running. And when you have kids, what do you want for your kids? You want them to go for university because you hope they will get a better situation than your situation. So the education system in France is not pushing much, even if they're pushing much more than before for apprenticeship, which is good.
It shouldn't be this way. There are plenty of people who need jobs. Florence Janicatrice is a professor of economics at the University of Lille.
The youth unemployment has been very high for the last four decades in France and in this region in particular. And the inequality probably impeached the creation of jobs.
At a job centre in Boulogne, I met with 21-year-old Salome. She's trying to find work as a dental assistant, but it's proving to be a tough challenge.
So I had an interview recently and I wasn't hired because I didn't have the right training. It's hard to find training places at the moment. I keep looking every day, but I can't find anything.
Many young people here find themselves cast adrift when work in their chosen field dries up, as happened to many during the pandemic. For those who haven't had much success in finding a job, some help is available. A few miles away in the town of Lecan, a group of people are building artisan furniture. It's all part of a scheme run by Vitamine T, a not-for-profit organisation which employs people on the minimum wage while they develop new skills. Lucas used to work in the building trade. Now he's training to be a carpenter.
I'll carry on doing this after my contract is up, to perfect my skills, because I really enjoy what I'm doing.
For economist Florence Janicatrice, however, schemes like this to give young people new skills and help them find work are just sticking plaster solutions. She says that to tackle youth unemployment properly, you need to look at the root cause of it. And that, she says, is social inequality.
That's the BBC's Thea Leggett reporting from northern France there. Finally, British rock band Pink Floyd has released its first single in almost 30 years today. The song is called Hey Hey Rise Up, and the band aims to use it to raise money for humanitarian relief for Ukraine. Recorded just last week, the track features vocals from Ukrainian singer Andrei Klunvik, who cut short an international tour to join Ukraine's territorial defense force when the war broke out. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.